36. Betrayal.
But I theorized that a conjurer with sufficient mental fortitude and a complete disregard for pain might be able to maintain a sufficient degree of control over a Gangolin. Yet how one might attain such a mental state is beyond my understanding.
From Colvin R. Vryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 249. Pain replaced Calamir's euphoria. It was as if spikes had been pounded into the back of his head, their sharp ends protruding from his eyes. Confused, he struggled to push himself upright. Nearby, Mistress Rudal shouted at the top of her lungs, threatening Mr. Citerin.
What happened?
He struggled to open his eyes. Between rapid blinks, he glimpsed his sword lying beside him, bloodied and rocking ever so slightly. Incantations carried through the air, but Calamir couldn't discern what magics were being mustered. Sharp pain shot through his head, and he struggled to recall the events of the past few moments. He had fallen, but everything before that was a blur tainted with lustful passion, a yearning for Mistress Rudal. But why had he yearned for her? A sudden sharpness surged through his head, and Calamir raised a hand to his face. He closed his eyes, but that did nothing to stave off the pain. The yelling intensified. Each shout evoked an excruciating ringing in his ears. It surged through his head, attempting to escape through his eyes.
"Commander,"
a feminine voice whispered. He didn't recall the voice, nor its owner. Blinking against the pain, Calamir struggled to focus on the woman now kneeling beside him. She spoke again, but her words were that of an incantation. Soon, green light surrounded her, but its appearance evoked only more pain. Calamir cried, clasping his eyes.
Why am I hurting?
He searched his memory, but the last clear moment he could recall was the aftermath of the battle with the monster. Everything else was a blur. Well, almost. Faint flashes of intense passion came to him, moments of ecstasy with a woman whose beauty was beyond measure. Lush dark hair, violet eyes more stunning than twilight, and skin. Mistress Rudal's face flashed amid his memories. Calamir groaned with disgust. Had he been with her? A sudden surge of rejuvenation filled Calamir. It flowed through his head, clearing his foggy memories. He blinked in disbelief as he recalled, to some degree, the events of the past day. His lewd acts with Mistress Rudal, his bowing to her every whim, and his craven retreat from the monster. She had made him spineless.
"You,"
Calamir growled, grabbing his sword and pushing himself upright.
"You harlot!"
He spun, nearly slicing the woman who had healed him. Calamir readied his sword, but halted. Mistress Rudal was bound to the wall with green tentacles. Lieutenant Varane was beside her, equally shackled by the magic. Cautious, Calamir took in his surroundings. He stood within a one-story curved hallway made of white stone. Four mages stood nearby, each friends of Mr. Aramian. One of the mages, however, looked ragged, his robe soaked with blood.
Had I stabbed him?
He vaguely recalled a scuffle with the man.
"Are you all right, Commander?" asked Mr. Citerin.
Two of those ice wolves stood beside him, baring their crystal-like teeth. Calamir nodded, then turned back to Mistress Rudal.
"You fools!" she spat. "Release us at once!"
"No,"
Mr. Cheval said, his tone contemptuous.
"We know you are not telling us everything. You knew about the monster. Why else would you run? I won't ask a third time. Tell us how to reverse the effects of its mist."
Calamir furrowed his brow. Had they found those that were debilitated by the monster's haze?
"Perhaps we didn't lose them."
"You can't!" she shouted. "It's beyond the channels of power. What your friend is experiencing is tantamount to a cursing. Nothing can restore him. Nothing. Now release us."
Calamir raised an eyebrow.
Who are they talking about? Nothing?
Mr. Cheval did not sound convinced.
We heard what you told the commander in the Yeltis den, the Barjanist added, stepping toward Mistress Ridal. About a Tevis roll that could reverse the venom's effects. Surely something comparable to that is here in Tardalim. You will identify it for us.
Mistress Ridal shook her head, her lips curled into a vindictive snarl.
Fine,
Mr. Cheval sighed and uttered an incantation, blue light surging around his hands. Someone tapped Calamir's arm and he turned. Mr. Saterin leaned close, his face twisted with worry.
Commander, I know he's been trouble, but he needs help.
Calamir eyed the illusionist and set his jaw. Was he talking about Mr. Aramian? When had he been around the monster?
Horrible that I cannot remember.
Please, sir, Mr. Saterin said. He doesn't deserve this fate. If there is a Tevisrol here that can help him, then we have to find it.
Taking in a deep breath, Calamir turned back to the Barjanist. Blue light shot across the hall, wrapping around Mistress Ridal in a translucent band that extended from her shoulders to her knees.
An inverted Barjan? I will squeeze you until your bones turn to powder, the Barjanist growled, his tone fierce. Silas will mend you, then I'll squeeze you again, and we will repeat this cycle until you help us. Such anger.
Calamir straightened his back and stomped to the man. Mistress Ridal was responsible for their predicaments, and she did deserve punishment, but not torture.
Mr. Cheval, Calamir barked, stop this at once. You're acting out of line.
The Barjanist turned, fury in his eyes.
Out of line? After what they've done? They knowingly brought us to this death trap. We're just as expendable as the other expeditions.
Calamir cocked his head.
What are you talking about?
The Mindalonians have been here before, Mr. Saterin said. Twice.
Calamir spun.
What? They've used us, the Barjanist spat. We're the third expedition to come here.
The words hit Calamir like a battering ram.
The third expedition?
But that contradicted what he and the Order had been told, although it did give one explanation to Mistress Rudal's actions and demeanor. Her knowledge of Tardalim, coupled with her secretive behavior, now made sense. But why lie? Was the Mindalorn Empire after more than just Tevis Rawls? What else was in Tardalim? Fighting his own tangle of furious emotions, Calamir turned to face the Mindalornian scholar.
Is this true?
Mistress Ridal didn't answer. Calamir glanced to the others and took in a deep breath.
I hope there is evidence to back up your claims.
There are corpses on the 25th floor, said Mr. Saterin. Most were clad in Mindalornian armor, and one of the residents of Tardalim told us about the other expeditions.
Resident?
Calamir narrowed his eyes.
One of the Ishari?
The mages shook their heads.
His name is Fench, the Arpranist said. The Mindalarnians slaughtered his people with the help of that monster.
Calamir flinched.
The Mindalarnians brought the monster with them?
Was that why Mistress Ridal and Lieutenant Varane fled?
It must be.
Mistress Ridal began chuckling, her mirth derisive. The Arpranist shook her head.
I think it was a prisoner here. The other Mindalarnians let it out. I think Vaim came here to free them all.
Mr. Cheval and Mr. Saterin looked surprised at the accusation, as did the other man. Mr. Saterin paled.
That's why Finch wanted us to promise not to let out the prisoners.
He turned to the still-laughing scholar.
You never wanted the Tevis Rawls at all, did you? Why do you want to free them? You can't unleash monsters like that upon the world.
The only reply was condescending laughter. Calamir turned away as the mages continued discussing the matter. There was still so much he didn't know, particularly what had transpired during his, well, his indisposed state.
I have to get back to the others.
He recalled a vague report from Meradin. He had mentioned strange Tevis Rawls and a safe haven called the Roost, but the details of the conversation were jumbled with lustful desires.
Rodden hadn't mentioned corpses, had he?
Troubled, Calamir paced toward Mistress Rudal. Her mirth had subsided, though she still looked amused. Lieutenant Beraine, however, was downright disgusted.
I can't trust either of them.
He wanted to ask their true intentions for coming to Tartalim, but he knew they wouldn't answer. He closed his eyes and recalled following them to a tower? And something about Tartalim's halls and defenses and gods?
That doesn't matter, he thought, shaking his head.
If they had found Tevis Rawls, then his purpose here was complete.
The sooner we can leave this godforsaken place, the better.
Taking in a deep breath, Calamir turned to the conversing mages.
Mr. Cheval, please escort these women to the campsite. I want them restrained. And Mr. Saterin, gather the other squad leaders. It's time we hold this expedition's final council.
The last of the encrusted venom fell into Captain Idara's pouch. At last, he thought, wiping his knife upon the dark teal grass. Smiling, he tied the pouch shut and tucked it under his cot, nestling it beside his pack. With the venom cleared away, the Yelta's tusk looked like a curved crystal. To his surprise, it was smooth to the touch. Idara had expected it to be marred with divots, as the encrusted venom had an uneven texture to it.
Perhaps the venom is secreted irregularly.
He eased back onto his cot, stroking the tusk. Now that the venom was a powder, all he had to do, the flapping of canvas carried through the tent, startling Idara. He sat upright, moving the broken tusk toward his only pant pocket, but his visitors, Dardel and Mirodin, stepped inside before he could conceal it. The expedition's second-in-command raised his brow.
I didn't expect to find you here.
Idara snorted.
Is that why you didn't have the decency to announce yourself?
The two squad leaders looked to each other, then Mirodin spoke.
Calamir has returned from the tower. He's called a council and wants you present.
Idara narrowed his eyes at the two men.
So, he wants me to attend? But why? What possible reason could the murderous bastard have to want him at the meeting?
True, he had been invited while aboard the Jiberan, but he hadn't attended any of the meetings since the death of his beloved.
Come now, Captain, Dardel said. This is urgent.
Really?
Idara eased the broken tusk to his pocket. He rose from his cot, standing so the two men couldn't see what he was doing. But by the looks on their faces, that only aroused suspicion.
What have you there?
Mirodin asked. Idara froze. His jaw tightened, and his face flushed.
No. Damn it, no. Lie to them, a deep voice said in his head. Say it is a cistern horn.
Slowly inhaling, Idara considered the suggestion. He had heard that name before. Was it the name of those ice wolves? But where had that voice come from?
A memento, he said. From one of those ice wolves.
Mirodin nodded.
I didn't take you for a trophy man.
Dardel didn't reply and swiftly exited the tent.
It worked, Idara thought, fighting back a smile.
He watched Mirodin step outside before crossing the tent.
Surely Helleron smiles upon me, and my vengeance.
Once outside, Idara secured his tent door. Mirodin was nearly to the clearing, but Dardel was gone. Those gathered in the mess area were being rousted by other squad leaders. Idara caught up to Mirodin and cleared his throat.
Do you know what this meeting is about?
Mirodin shook his head.
But the commander did sound angry.
Idara harrumphed, and Mirodin chuckled. They soon met up with other squad leaders, all heading toward one of those strange tree buildings a few dozen paces from the camp. Calamir, the murderous bastard, paced in front of the bizarre structure, hands clasped behind his back. The sight of him made Idara's blood boil.
Calm yourself.
He reached into his pocket and gripped the broken tusk. Its smooth texture eased his fury, reminding him of his plan. They soon reached the group of other squad leaders. Mirodin stepped around his fellows and moved to the head of the group. Idara, however, stayed in the back. Any closer, and he might give in to the temptation to stab the Jaiboran's murderer. More squad leaders joined the group. Idara counted those in attendance.
Only 21.
Idara's part of the expedition had not lost any squad leaders during their ascent. Kalamir had begun speaking, talking about some influence the heartless Mandalorian whore had placed upon him. Idara returned his attention to the murderer's words.
"Since being freed from Mistress Rudal's unnatural influence," Kalamir said, "it has come to my attention that she has lied to us. I am sure most of you now know that we were not the first expedition to venture here."
"You mean the Mandalorian corpses?" asked a woman.
"Yes," the bastard said, nodding. "Unfortunately, despite our questioning, Mistress Rudal will not say a word about those other expeditions. She has been unrepentantly defiant."
Idara strained to hold on to his composure as Kalamir continued talking about the so-called betrayal by the Mandalorians. None of the squad leaders were surprised about anything the bastard said until he spoke of the monster.
"According to Mr. Cheval, the monster is on its way here. Tardalim's halls no longer change. What caused them to do so was stopped by Mistress Rudal, or at least from what I can remember. My time under her influence is laced with distraction."
"How do you know this, then?" a squad leader demanded.
"Can we verify this?" another asked. "What about that map atop the tower?"
Amid more questions, Dardel approached, clutching something in his hands. Kalamir glanced to his second-in-command, then turned back to the others.
"It was confirmed by Mr. Cheval. Though the details are unclear to me, I watched the two Mandalorians tamper with Tardalim's workings. They stopped the change in the halls and altered several other things. Mr. Cheval and Mr. Sateran believe there is a barrier preventing the monster from entering this place, but I am not certain it still stands. I can't remember all of what Mistress Rudal said she stopped, but I think that barrier to be one of them. Which brings me to the purpose of this council. We must leave Tardalim at once."
Idara expected to hear a commotion of complaints, but the squad leaders were silent.
"We have what we came for, and that monster has killed too many of us. I will not lose another man or woman to it. As we speak, the Barjanists are sealing off 3 of the 4 stairwells leading to the roost. The stair nearest us is still open. Those of you with squad members still searching the treasure trove, go find them. Bring them back here. Once everyone has returned, the Barjanists will seal off the last stairwell."
"But then how can we leave?" a woman asked.
"There is another way out of here. Well, the only way, according to Mr. Sateran. It's through a pit across this roost. Those of you not gathering your squads will begin ferrying our supplies in the Tevis rolls there."
"Do we know where the monster is now?" a squad leader asked.
Kalamir nodded.
"Mr. Kallus is tracking it through that map atop the tower. Last I heard, it was on the 29th floor."
Taking a deep breath and pulling his shoulders back, Kalamir said,
"This is enough discussion for now. If your squads are searching, go find them. If not, stay here for your assignments."
Men and women dashed away, but Idara stood still, his desire for vengeance swelling within him.
"If only I could kill you now."
He fingered the broken tusk, stroking its sharp end. But he couldn't carry out his revenge now. There were too many witnesses. Dardel leaned close to the murderous bastard, furtively extending a clenched fist. The commander took something blue his second-in-command handed him, and then whispered something Idara couldn't hear. Curious, he craned his neck and stepped forward, but before he could take another, a hand gripped his shoulder.
"Your crew is still gathering Tevis rolls, aren't they?" Mirodin asked.
Idara glanced over his shoulder, then to the squad leader. The mention of his crew made his anger simmer, and he began to worry. Of those still searching the treasury, his crew was the farthest away.
They are. Best I get to them.
He turned and ran past Mirrodin toward the camp. Vayam struggled against her bonds as those fools prodded her through the camp.
It will not end like this, she thought. It can't. I cannot fail the Emperor.
Shoved from behind, she stumbled forward, tripping and falling upon the teal grass.
Get up,
the Barjanist bellowed.
If you hadn't pushed me,
the man snorted with derision.
Perhaps if you weren't struggling, I wouldn't have to push you.
Fighting back a growl, Vayam eased onto her knees. She glanced to Kaidol, who stood beside her. Like Vayam, the lieutenant's hands were pulled behind her back, tied with green cords woven from magic, the handiwork of Ildin.
Get up!
Morjadayan shouted, tugging on the cord binding Vayam. Jerked to her feet, Vayam steadied herself and stepped forward. All around her, soldiers and mercenaries hurried in and out of tents with their belongings.
I hope you all die.
Prodded once again, Vayam stumbled forward. They continued through the camp, and then her captors pulled her to a stop. Ildin stepped around Vayam and Kaidol and opened a tent door to their left.
Inside, Morjadayan barked.
Vayam held her ground. She tried to press the rivet to activate the euphoronizer, but it was not quite in reach of her fingers.
If the damned cords would only give.
But cords woven from magic never gave.
Go!
Kaidol complied, stepping past Vayam and into the tent.
Idiot woman.
Stop that, the Barjanist said. Ildin, throw her inside.
Vayam continued to struggle, but not a heartbeat later the Yeltis grabbed her. Her feet now dangled, and the beast tossed her into the tent. She landed on her shoulder and gasped as intense pain flared down her arm and up her neck. She rolled onto her stomach, and part of her arm became numb.
You insolent Visak!
She breathed through the pain as her captor's feet crunched the grass around her. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the two mages dragging Kaidol to a cot. They set her atop it, and Morjadayan uttered an incantation. Blue light surrounded Kaidol and the bedding, undoubtedly an inverted Barjan. Once they were done with the lieutenant, both men turned on Vayam.
Get up,
the Barjanist barked. Vayam closed her eyes, fighting back the pain. She didn't dare move. Boots crunched on grass. A force jerked her upright, sending a dart of pain through her arm. Although she fought to remain silent, she still screamed and fell to her knees. They dragged her through the tent, and more pain surged across her arm. Parts of her shoulder went numb as they tossed her upon a cot. She fought to stay conscious. Incantations sounded above her, followed by blue light. A force soon pressed against her, causing another wave of pain that evoked an involuntary gasp.
It's a pity you didn't cooperate, Morjadayan said. But we still need to know about that Tevis roll. Why don't you pry it from her, Ildin?
A reluctant sigh filled the tent. Then the illusionist uttered an incantation. Soon, gray particles danced in the air above Vayam, then wisped into her nostrils. Tingling pricking crept through her skull, lingering behind her eyes. Though she had never succumbed to enthralling magic, she knew what it should feel like. The pricking intensified, then stopped.
It didn't work, Ildin gasped.
What do you mean?
Ildin stumbled over his words. It didn't take hold. Like when we tried to enthrall Finch. Morjadayan stepped close, his brows raised. He opened his mouth to speak, but the tent door flapped open, followed by boots crunching crisp grass.
Are they secured?
The voice belonged to the squad leader, Mirrodin.
They are,
Morjadayan said, turning around.
But we haven't learned about that Tevis roll. Did you try enthralling them?
Asked the squad leader. It didn't work, Ildin said, sounding confused. Despite her pain, Vayam smiled at the illusionist's perplexity.
Well, leave them, Mirrodin said. We need to erect a barricade. Fendar says the monster is on the 30th floor.
The Barjanist sighed and turned away. He disappeared. Three pairs of footsteps left the tent, and then the canvas door flapped shut.
Perhaps we aren't doomed after all, Kaidol whispered.
Bayam winced against the pain.
Perhaps.
She eased her head back, her shoulder throbbing.
We must trust in Lord Chesareth,
Kaidal said, sounding hopeful.
We've prepared the way for the divine being to reach us. Once he defeats those fools and finds us, he'll grace our minds and know our purpose here. We will return triumphant, and with a host so powerful no kingdom on Kaldah will defy our empire.
Those words should have invigorated Bayam, but they didn't. Her thoughts turned to the so-called monster, Orath Issian. Would he free them, as Kaidal hoped, or would he kill them in his rage? A sudden sense of defeat overcame her. Though she had remained defiant, determined to fulfill the Emperor's mandate, now she was no better than Meraides or Corodician, a failure.
Forever doomed within the halls of damnation,